So moved.
Motion, Mr. Hudson.
Second.
Second, Mr. Schaefer. Any question on the motion? Take a vote. Schaefer?
Yes.
Mrs. Green?
Yes.
Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
I will, we're now back out of executive session into regular session again. Judge?
Members of the council, do you have a decision?
Mr. President, or Your Honor. I started to promote you again.
I'm going to announce my candidacy after this hearing.
That's right. That is right. That's appropriate. Before we proceed to any motions or vote, I would like to review some preliminary matters and standards and the law that are applicable to both appeals. It is important to focus on the standard of review. As you will see, the standard does not permit the council to substitute its own opinion for that of the commission, nor does it permit a rehearing of what was before the commission. It is and was a hearing of the record, as you've heard already. In reviewing the commission's decision on appeal, Sussex County Code 99, Section 39, Subsection 2 states that the council shall review the record of the hearing before the commission and shall make a determination as to whether the commission's decision was the result of an orderly and logical review of the evidence and involved the proper interpretation and application of the chapter. The Delaware Supreme Court held that the commission's consideration of a preliminary subdivision plan application acts in a manner that is partly in a ministerial function and partly in a judicial capacity. And therefore, on appeal, the appealing body must determine whether the decision is supported by substantial evidence and is free from legal error. Substantial evidence means such relevant evidence as a reasonable mind might accept as adequate to support a conclusion. The council's review is limited to correcting errors of law and determining whether substantial evidence exists to support the commission's findings of fact, and that when substantial evidence exists, the council will not reweigh or substitute its own judgment for that of the commission. In other words, even if some council members think it is not how they would have voted, they are not permitted to substitute those views here. If there is substantial evidence to support the commission's decision, and if the law was not misinterpreted, the appellants had the burden of proof to demonstrate that the commission did not engage in an orderly and logical review of the evidence and erred in its application of the law, or that there was no orderly and logical review of the evidence. Therefore, if there is substantial evidence that demonstrates the commission's decision was based on an orderly and logical review of the evidence and the law was accurately applied, the council must hold the commission's approval. In addition, the council is not permitted to consider any issues and arguments raised by the appellant on appeal that were not raised below, as they are considered waived on appeal. After hearing each appeal, the council may, one, affirm the commission's decision, two, reverse the commission's decision, or three, remand the matter back to the commission for further review and consideration. If the council remands the matter back to the commission, it may direct the commission to hold a new hearing within a specified time period, and following the hearing, it can direct the commission to issue a written decision containing findings and conclusions. The council may reverse a decision only if the commission made an error of law or the commission's decision was not the result of an orderly and logical review of the evidence and the applicable law. For the two appeals before council today, each will be dealt with separately in the order they are heard. They will be referred to as the Hicks Appeal and the Bartley Appeal. The first appeal to be acted on is the Hicks Appeal. And Mr. President, I understand you have a motion.
I do, sir. I do have a motion for the Hicks Appeal, which I will read. I will also like just to, as we start here, we appreciate everybody being considerate and kind. Regardless of how this is read or goes or vote goes, we don't want anyone, any applause or booing. You can do that outside all you want, the whole circle out there. In the matter of the Hicks Appeal, I move that the council affirm the decision of the Planning and Zoning Commission on remand and its approval of application number S2021-06, filed by Shell Brothers LLC for Coral Lakes, FKA Coral Crossing, for the reasons outlined below and based on the standards as read by our attorney, Mr. Moore, which are incorporated herein by reference. One, the commission complied with the council remand instructions. The Hicks appellants argue that the commission did not comply with the council's instructions on remand, which stated, this matter is remanded to the commission for further consideration of the entire record, all evidence and facts of this application in open session, to consult with its legal counsel, take a public vote thereon with instructions to clearly state in the record reasons in support of the commission's vote and in accordance with 9 Delaware 6811 and the commission's rules of procedure section 15-15.4 to issue a written decision containing findings and conclusions that are consistent with the law. Council finds that the commission complied fully with these instructions. On June 23, 2022, the commission reconsidered this matter in open session at a commission meeting. The commission's reconsideration included a comprehensive statement of the law by the commission's legal counsel, confirmation from the Planning and Zoning Director Jamie Whitehouse that the applicant's submission met all requirements for preliminary approval, a public vote based on 16 findings and 21 conditions, enumerated the motion by approval as read by the council. Three yes votes, one no vote, one abstention, with each commissioner stating the reasons for his or her respective vote. And by letter dated June 24, 2022, a written decision was issued to the applicant in accordance with the Planning and Zoning Commission's rules of procedure, Rule 15.4. Following a decision by the commission on the application, a copy of the written decision shall be sent to the applicant or the agent or attorney for the applicant. In addition, the motion was specifically based on the record made during the public hearing. The commission was not required to hold a new hearing or restate the entire record in open session. The commissioners were required to review and reconsider the entire record, then vote in open session and provide reasons for their vote. The comprehensive motion, vote, and reasons for such vote demonstrates the commission's thorough consideration of the issues surrounding the application as outlined in the record, thus confirming that the commission engaged in an orderly and logical review of this application based on the entire record prior to approving the preliminary subdivision site plan. In fact, council had already found that the commission engaged in an orderly and logical review of this application following the initial appeal hearing filed by the applicant, thus negating the need to revisit it here. The fact that legal counsel read the motion is immaterial. The motion itself was made by Commissioner Mears following the reading when he stated, so moved. Moreover, in accordance with Rule 11.1 of the Planning and Zoning Commission's Rules of Procedure, the commission follows Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure. If a written motion is submitted, Section 15.6.3 permits a person other than the commissioner making the motion to actually read the motion into the record. Mr. Whitehouse's confirmation that the application complies with the subdivision and zoning code cannot be interpreted as a commission delegating its authority to a staff member. It is common practice for Mr. Whitehouse to review and comment on subdivision applicants' compliance or non-compliance with the applicable code provisions. In fact, Sussex County Code 998B mandates the staff review. However, Mr. Whitehouse does not make the final decision and does not have a vote. The final vote to approve or deny a subdivision application lies in the commission only. The commission's June 23rd decision was a result of an orderly and logical review of the evidence. The Hicks appellants object to the commission's legal counsel providing legal guidance on the record and insinuate that this is akin to the commissioners voting the way their attorney told them to vote. This argument is flawed in several ways. First, the council expressly instructed the commission to consult with its legal counsel. During the process on remand, clearly this was done, and it was done in open session, thus providing complete transparency to the public. Second, although commissioner provided reasons for his or her vote, it is important to note that one commissioner voted nay, one commissioner abstained. Had legal counsel or staff controlled their votes, as the Hicks appellants allege, one would expect the vote to be unanimous approval. In order to perform an orderly, logical, and thorough review, the commission needs to not only have the facts and documentation available to it, but the applicable law as well. This was then done and resulted in imposition of extensive conditions of approval, including the denial of bonus density lots, reconfiguration of the lots, and more. These conditions must be complied with or the project will not get built. The Hicks appellants also reiterate their objection to Mr. Whitehouse's confirmation that the application complied with applicable code provisions. The Sussex County Code mandates staff to review as to conformity with county requirements. However, the ultimate decision lies with the commission. June 23rd approval was based on the proper application of the law and regulations. The Hicks appellants allege that the commission's approval on remand should be reversed because the record does not demonstrate that the decision involved a proper application of applicable law and regulation. The crux of their argument rests on the assertion that the commission did not publicly deliberate or determine compliance with the law at the June 23rd meeting, but rather the commission's legal counsel provided an extensive review of the law and the facts. Mr. Whitehouse's confirmation that application complied with the applicable ordinances. The Hicks appellants failed to take into account the extensive written record below the public hearing, public input, agency input, several referred notes, and allow time for additional consideration and more. The commission has been reviewing this matter for months. The code does not require the commissioners to individually review all the evidence and comment on it in open session. It does, however, require these provide reasons for their vote, which upon remand did occur. That's the motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. My motion, second, Mr. Hudson. Any questions on the motion? We will take the vote. Mr. Schaefer.
Mr. President, I think I've made it clear my opinion on this subdivision over the past few months, and I don't think there's any mistake as to how I feel about it. However, my my review today is very limited in scope, and I believe firmly that the Planning and Zoning Commission did apply a logical review of the application and the submittals. I did not find that there has been any errors in their application of the law. I also believe that the Planning and Zoning Commission reviewed and considered substantial evidence and took it into consideration when they made their decision. Therefore, I will affirm the PNC decision. I approve of President Vincent's motion, and I vote yes.
Thank you, Mrs. Green.
Mr. President, based on the motion given and testimony given today, and the three votes to affirm, I vote yes.
Mr. Hudson.
I agree with the motion, with the reasons and emotions in the motion and the decision of the Planning and Zoning Commission that they made an orderly and logical decision. I vote yes.
I certainly agree with everything I read as a motion. I think everything was done properly. My vote is yes, motion carried. Next, Mr.
Yes.
Moore.
The next matter to be heard and ready for a motion, Mr. President, is the Bartley matter. And I believe you have a motion.
Sure.
After a sip of water.
Mm-hmm. I have a motion, sir. In the matter of the Hicks, wait a minute, got the wrong one. In the matter of the Bartley appeal, I move that the council affirm the decision of the Planning and Zoning Commission on remand and its approval of application number S2021-06, filed by Shell Brothers LLC for Coral Lakes, FKA Coral Crossing, for the reasons outlined below and based on the standard as read by our attorney, Mr. Moore, which are incorporated herein by reference. The commission provided adequate notice of the public hearing. Mr. Bartley alleges that the commission did not provide adequate notice of the public hearing, claiming that the notice failed to include the place at which the text and maps relating to the proposed change may be examined. Mr. Bartley's argument fails on multiple levels. The commission hearing was advertised in two newspapers, the Delaware State News and Cape Gazette, copies of which have been attached to the commission response together with the corresponding affidavits of publication. Not only do the advertisements include the place, date, and time of the public hearing at which the text and maps will be discussed and available for examination, but the advertisements also include a statement that additional information pertaining to the applications may be reviewed online at sussexcountyde.gov prior to the meeting or by calling 302-855-7878. Office hours are Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30. This provides two additional avenues to review the text and maps at issue prior to the public hearing. Moreover, the hearing was well attended by the public, many of whom spoke and or submitted letters to the commission. This confirms the notice was adequate. In addition, Mr. Bartley did not raise an objection to the form of notice at the public hearing. The council was not permitted to consider any issue and arguments raised on appeal that were not raised below as they are considered waived on appeal. This was confirmed by the presiding judge in this matter who ruled, even if timely raised, an argument or evidence not part of the record below cannot be considered on appeal. The commission held a fair and orderly public hearing. Mr. Bartley also contends that the commission failed to hold a fair and orderly public hearing. His argument is flawed on its face. First, in his decision on the first appeal brought by the applicant, counsel already found that the commission engaged in an orderly and logical review of its application, and therefore the issue as to whether the hearing was orderly is moot. Mr. Bartley also contends that a statement made by Jamie Whitehouse, Sussex County Planning and Zoning Director, confirming that the applicant's plan meets the requirements of the subdivision and zoning code somehow opened the record, which triggered the public's comment, the public's right to comment. Mr. Whitehouse's statement did not add evidence to the record, to the closed record. It was a statement as to the application of the code to the evidence in the record, and is precisely what the council instructed the commission to reconsider on remand. The appellant claimed that the commission did not adequately consider this project, but the record shows that it did. The record in this case is voluminous. There was a lengthy application which contained information concerning property ownership, plots, maps, developer information, and more. The record demonstrates the application conforms to the county code. Mr. Bartley argues that neither the planning and zoning director or staff checked the preliminary plat to ensure conformity with the applicable county zoning and subdivision regulations. First, by not raising this issue below, Mr. Bartley is barred from asserting it on appeal. Second, Mr. Bartley's argument is not supported by the record. The record is replete with evidence contrary to this argument. In its January 11, 2022 letter, the department staff reviewed the application and provided comments, each of which were addressed by Shell in writing prior to the public hearing and were available for the commission's consideration at the public hearing. The commission's response further outlined numerous ways in which the plan followed the county code. These were considered by the commission on remand as part of the record. In his reply, Mr. Bartley raised a new argument that the easements and grading plan were not properly addressed by the commission because they were not included on the preliminary site plan. This argument, again, was not raised by Mr. Bartley below and therefore is barred on appeal. However, it's important to note that these items will be part of the final site plan. In fact, Mr. Bartley acknowledges that Condition S mandates that the final site plan contain a grading plan. Condition S also states that no building permit will be issued without a grading plan and no certificates of occupancy will be issued without a grading certificate showing compliance. The wetlands were properly considered. Mr. Bartley next argues that the wetlands were not properly considered and that the lot design will disturb upwards of 25 acres of non-tidal wetlands. Mr. Bartley's interpretation of both the subdivision plan and the applicable law is incorrect. The record includes information pertaining to wetlands, delineation as to federal wetlands, which are under the U.S. Corps of Army Engineers. The isolated low areas identified by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers do not meet the DENREC definition of wetlands and therefore do not meet the county's definition of wetlands and are otherwise unregulated. Low areas do not, in and of itself, constitute regulated wetlands. There are no DENREC wetlands on this site. There are, however, 5.65 acres of federal wetlands, which the commission specifically protected by denying the bonus density lots, which were originally located adjacent thereto. While there are regulated non-tidal wetlands on this site, all proposed lots will be configured outside of those regulated wetlands, as well as the non-regulated non-tidal wetlands that meet the definition by DENREC consistent with the county code. There will also be 50-foot buffer from the non-tidal jurisdictional wetland, which is twice the code's 25-foot buffer requirement. Finally, Condition B expressly provides that no lot shall contain any federal or state wetlands. All federal or state wetlands will be clearly shown on the final site plan. The density was accurately calculated. Mr. Bartley has raised an objection to the density calculation. However, this issue was not raised below and therefore is barred on appeal. That being said, Mr. Bartley's density calculation is erroneous. Because it is located in a coastal area, Coral Lakes fall under section 115-194.3c, which uses the density of the underlying zoning district for developments using central wastewater collection and treatment systems, with the allowable density being determined based on the lot area and the area of land set aside for common open space or recreational use by, but shall exclude any area designated as a tidal tributary stream or tidal wetlands by 115-193. Coral Lakes is located in an AR1 zoning district which permits 2 units per acre. The site contains a total of 152.34 acres. Because there are no tidal tributary stream or tidal wetlands, the total acreage is multiplied by 2, which is an allowable density of 304 units. The appeal fee is not subject to council's jurisdiction. Mr. Bartley has raised an issue as to the appeal fee charged in this matter under ordinance number 2868. On August 23rd, 2022, Mr. Bartley filed suit in the Court of Chancery, captioned Terrence Bartley versus County Council of Sussex, Delaware, CA, number 2022-0743, challenging the appeal fee. As such, this is not the proper venue for deciding this issue. Mr. Bartley's assertion of future rights concerning the final subdivision plan has no bearing on this appeal. Mr. Bartley makes an assertion that under Delaware Code 6810 and 6811, he has the ability to appeal a final site plan once it's recorded. This argument has no bearing on the current appeal and therefore does not warrant discussion. That's my motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion second, Mr. Hudson. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mr. Schaefer.
Mr. President, again, I've been very clear on my opinion on this subdivision. However, my review today is very limited in scope. I agree with the with President Vincent's motion. I believe that the Planning and Zoning Commission did act in an orderly and logical review of the record and evidence presented. I found no errors in law, and I will vote yes.
Thank you, Mr. Green.
Mr. President, based on the motion and testimony given here today, I vote yes.
Thank you. Mr. Hudson.
I agree with the reasons in the motion and the and that the decisions of the Planning and Zoning Commission's were logical and orderly. I vote yes.
I agree with my motion as I read. I vote yes. Motion carried. We're now going to take a recess for a few minutes. I'll allow you guys to clear the room if you choose to. We'll be back shortly, maybe 15, 20 minutes or something. But hold on, yeah. Could you please be quiet? You can leave, but just be quiet. Yes, sir.
Just a point of information. Will a written decision of the council be filed separate and apart from the vote on the motion? And if so, when will that decision be filed?
Mr. Moore?
What we have done in the past is provide a copy of the motion to any of the parties, and then with the minutes reflecting the actual vote, and would reflect verbatim what was said by all the parties.
What would constitute the decision being filed? The preparation of the minutes or the vote? For appeal purposes?
For appeal purposes, can we just take a look at that and get back to you on that? Typically, it is once it is published, and with planning and zoning, when there is a publication, it's actually published online the next day. This is a little differently, so it would probably be in the next week's minutes and be when they would be approved.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Anything else? Okay. Now, I don't entertain motion to go into recess.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Schaefer.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Green. Question on the motion. Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
We are now in recess.